Okay, ready. Welcome. It's 3:04. Welcome, and we will first off welcome to our new supervisor of election, Jerry Holland, and thank you for being here. So it's kind of exciting. This is my first meeting as chair. So, but we'll go around the room to my left. Introductions.
Austin Quickle, Mayor Appointee.
Linnell Feldman, SOE. Do we say it's appointee? Either way, I'm happy to have your seat, sir. Thank you very much. This is my first meeting as a panel member.
Oh, Daniel Henry, a City Council President Appointee.
And I'm Jerry Holland, Duval County Supervisor of Elections.
Robert Phillips, SOE staff.
And, of course, Ray Pringle, I'm mayor's appointee. So with that,
Chairman,
yes.
We do have Ingrid Montgomery is excused.
Okay.
And Robert Maldonado said he's running late because of depositions. He will try to get here, but he can't promise that he'll be here.
I hope he does. He's a good man. So with that, quorum. How many members do we have?
We currently have seven.
So we have a quorum.
We do have a quorum.
Okay. And we next on the agenda is the approval of the April 12th, 2023 minutes. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
I'll say second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
So it's approved. The supervisor of elections update with the transition process of the new supervisor of elections. So I'll turn it to Jerry Holland.
Thank you, Mr. Pringle. A couple things, just to update you on some of the projects we're working on, some of the things we're working through budget, some of the policy maybe changes, you could say, that we're looking going forward in the 2024 elections. First of all, 2 days before taking office on July 1st, the office was sued under the Equal Protection Clause, and the lawsuit premise was we have 14 city council districts. Some have 19 and 18 precincts. Some have 9 and 10 precincts, and therefore there was not equal access to voting throughout each of the individual city council districts. So I at general counsel represents our office. I asked our attorney to have a meeting with the plaintiff's attorney, sat down with them, and because I really didn't feel, I felt like they had a valid lawsuit. I mean, how do you argue someone having more than twice the precincts in one city council district? And the one particular one, actually, arguments you could make would be, if it was a large geographical district, you might need more precincts. If it was also a larger population, you might be able to argue. Maybe not that many, but argue a difference in precincts. But actually, the examples were actually the most compact districts with the fewest voters. And so there wasn't a lot of argument that the number per city council district was something that shouldn't be changed. So to the plaintiff's attorney is I said, let's propose a medium that we can accept, and then from there forward, not be more than one from that median nor less than one. So we're very close no matter what district you're in. We picked a median of 11 precincts, which meant that we would be no more than 12 in any precinct and no less than 10. For two of the precincts, it was a reduction as much as 7, from 19 to 12, from 18 to 12. There were some that went up. Some had 8, went up to 9, went to 11. You know, there was many of them. In fact, I've got the list, and I can give you the numbers and the copies. Just to go through quickly, District 1 went from 14 precincts. These are proposed to 11 precincts. District 2, from 13 precincts to 12. District 3 stayed the same, 12 to 12. District 4 stayed the same, 10 to 10. District 5 went from 12 precincts to 11 precincts. District 6 stayed the same, 12 to 12. District 7 went from 18 to 12. District 8 went from 9 to 11. District 9 stayed the same, 11 to 11. District 10 went from 19 to 12. District 11 went from 13 to 12. District 12 went from 14 to 12. District 13 went from 16 to 12. And District 14 went from 13 to 11. So the number of precincts we currently have is 186. The proposal is 161.
Can you repeat District 14 again?
Yes, District 14 went from 13 to 11.
Okay. And the total?
Total, 161 precincts, you know, versus what's currently 186. Now, my process is this, and the plaintiff's attorney said they would agree with that and dismiss the lawsuit, but of course, by statute, I have to get the city council's approval. I have met now with all but three council members and also attended some of their town meetings and any meeting that they would like me to attend to explain the process. In conjunction with precincts going down, my desire is also to increase early voting. So we're looking at basically versus the last election, five new sites. Those sites being proposed right now is EWU, is the District 2 Park in the region, Planning District 2, also down in the Bartram area, a site down in that area. Also, the new community center that opened on Beach Boulevard in District 4, the Southside Community Center on Beach Boulevard just before Southside Boulevard, to open one there, and also at the Maxville Library.
That's correct.
And so those are new that haven't been at all or are not in a while. We are eliminating a couple early voting sites, one being Prime Osborne, and then the other one being Joseph E. Lee Community Center, mainly because of either the participation or the limited size and lack of good ADA accessibility. And so that was on the Joseph E. Lee. We had even had an accident there where someone was injured because of the sidewalks being unlevel. So the desire is obviously to promote voting and more voting prior to Election Day. My goal is to try to get up to 75% of the voters voting before Election Day. So that's promoting vote by mail. As we all know, Senate Bill 90 makes a reset after every state and federal general election. And so we went from about 120 in November of 2022 to the spring elections of about 75, you know, requests for vote by mail ballots. So we will be doing two things. We will also be going to those who had vote by mail before and doing a mailer to them. And that mailer will be one we think will be more popular because it will be an envelope that will mail their request back in. There was a concern last time because of their signature and different things exposed. So we'll go after those who had it before. We'll also look at the demographics, who the largest percent of who normally votes by mail. My guess is it's an older population, but that's just right now a presumption. And so we will also send to that group a request if they would like to vote by mail, because we'd like to see vote by mail increase the numbers. So that's the two ways we'd like to see more people vote prior to Election Day. Yes.
First off, wow. Thank you, sir. The only one that looks like it had an increase, if I jotted my numbers down correctly, so was District 8 will go from 9 to 11. Is that the increase?
That was an increase. That is correct. And that was the only increase.
Okay.
That is correct.
Do you see any challenges in being able to find an actual two additional locations for a precinct in that district?
Let me tell you, from a standpoint, if we could find them And I've told council members, right now, it is a challenge to find polling locations. There's two challenges, for no doubt. One is finding poll workers, and one is finding polling locations. In fact, even in this case, we've had, how many of you had dropped off?
At least several. A lot of churches.
At least a half a dozen,
yeah.
I think y'all have brought to me. So I will take, I mean, and my goal to the council is to stay within the cap, but also as we find locations where they're needed, and by where they're needed, it doesn't do me any good if I got two polling locations next door to each other. But like in an area where you see and you look at the maps and you say, well, that's a distance, and I know so-and-so, that may be a good polling. We will investigate it. We're not opposed to increasing the number of precincts. It's finding them and staying within the range. So, and that commitment is to the council members also. If they know anything, if they have, we have some that we think would be great locations, but they don't want to be it, you know. But that is it. That is a goal, you know. And well, all we have to do is to increase the overall number of precincts is to move those who are at the bottom up. And then that moves, let's say the 10 was 11, then the range could easily be 12 and be 11 and 13. But you got to find the move the bottom up, and that's the goal. So, so yes, to answer your question, that is the one that increased, you know.
Are you through with, I'd like to get through with your report.
Well, let me finish that.
Yeah,
okay.
And then we'll take questions.
Okay, sounds good. So that's the precinct lawsuit that we're going through, meeting with the council members. I also then will meet with, I'm going to reach out to every group I can, to the league, to the NAACP, True the Vote, any group, any party that wants an explanation to come to go meet to them. Also to get that Northside Coalition, anyone that wants to meet, to bring them the information, the facts. And again, I enlist anyone, if we can find more polling locations, we can move the needle, but to settle this lawsuit, I've got to stay with something that can stay no more than one, no less than one. So that's the challenge there. As I mentioned, the early voting sites, the other things new that the office is doing. One of the things in early voting, as you know, in our past, in early voting, you had a combination of the express vote and the ballot printers, ballot on demand printers that would allow you to print a vote ballot and then use it through a normal DS200 tabulator. In our early voting sites, they will be all express votes. There will be no ballot on demand. They're at end of life, and it's really at a point we've gotten in our budget to add enough express votes in all early voting sites to have express votes. And so that is where we'll be on early voting using the express vote. And there's many reasons, but the ballot on demand was the critical thing, being at end of life on that particular equipment. The next thing is we had favorable response from the administration and from the council so far. We go to the budget hearing tomorrow, and that is to replace all our voting equipment, the tabulators and our high-speed counters. We currently have ES&S DS200s. We will go to their latest ES&S DS300s. And we will also, on the high-speed counters that are used for counting the vote-by-mail ballots and also for doing recounts, which is the 850s, we will go to the 950s. And so those, it will cost about $2.2 million for the equipment replacement. And one of the reasons is not just it would be nice. We're not the only county. There is right now the count is over 10 that are replacing in Florida. We were one of the first counties with the ES&S DS200s. They are at end of life. The failure rate was in previous elections over 15%, predicted it could be even high as 20%. And when I say failure rate on a machine, it doesn't mean it doesn't tabulate correctly. It means it stops tabulating, which means you could be in a precinct, and if the tabulator fails, you have to tell the voter, I got to take your envelope, your ballot, put it in an envelope, you can come back tonight, we've got to get another machine, we got to run them all through. That is not a confidence builder for voters if they can't put their ballot in the machine. As I said, it's not a question of does the equipment need to be replaced, it's a question of when. And as I told the council members, you don't want to make the win after 2024, after the biggest election, and have that kind of problem and have that notoriety of failing during the 24 elections. So favorable so far. Obviously, it's got to go through council, the finance committee, and it's an enhancement. So they have to decide how to fund that. And so, but both the administration and the council was favorable on replacing that. So that's the other aspect of our equipment and what's happening to equipment. One last thing is our election center at Imeson. The lease is up in March. Obviously, I do not want to move out in the middle of an election on March 16th. So therefore, the administration I've met with, and we had two options. We have to notify Imeson by October of this year whether or not to extend the lease. And we have two options, either 2 years or 5 years. We're looking at the two-year option. They've agreed to do that, and we're pursuing plans and engineering to build a building, which is actually down on between Jefferson and Davis and Beaver Street. It's the one next to Trinity. You remember it. It was the Tent City. It's where the Saks restaurant was going to be built. It's in La Villa. It's an entire city block. We would combine the Monroe Street office and the election center at one site. The previous SOE, they were looking at moving the downtown office to Imeson. He asked me in December, was I supportive of that? I said, well, I'll wait until after qualifying and tell you. It's presumptuous of me to say anything unless, you know, I know if I'm elected. And so after qualifying, I notified him and said, no, I think the core service of election services need to be downtown. Their proposal was to put one person at Ed Ball Building. But I don't know even one person that can do everything we do, and I think the parking is tough there. So my move and plan is obviously to build a building downtown. It's an aggressive plan to try to have it built by 2026. But again, the first step is get plans and engineering so the city can go out to bid. It is not in this year's CIP budget. It would be in next year's. But we're moving forward on that. There are some people interested in trying to find us other locations. I will look at anything that makes sense. I'm not closed-minded. If there's something else already constructed or can be done quicker or can be less money, but I'm really adamant that it should be somewhere very close to the core, you know, and not be all the way out at Imeson or all the way out at Cecil Field or something of that nature. It needs to be a core service. And I will tell you, from an efficiency, if I can have the election center and the downtown office in the same building, it's a lot more efficient because it's just everybody in one site works a lot better. So have we missed anything? Okay. Those are just a few things we're working on in my first month and a half. So, but any questions you got? Just a little bit.
We also had an increase in pay for the poll.
Yeah, we did. And how much was it?
We talked about that at one of the
other. Yeah, it did get approved before I came into office to increase the poll worker pay.
$50 per
person. Yeah. And one of our recruitment things is also, one of my goals is I read the statute as it says in there should be at least one person of another party in every precinct. In the spring elections in 18 of the precincts, they were all the same party. And or there was 26 that had all of the same party and an NPA. I don't interpret an NPA as someone of another party. I haven't asked for an opinion, but and my goal is this, is to have two people of the two major parties in every precinct. So it's a real recruitment effort to go out, and it's not on the Democratic side. They've been very successful in bringing poll workers. It's on the Republican side. But my goal is obviously to have it minimum of one, but my goal is really to have two Democrats and two Republicans in every precinct. For no other reason, I think it gives good transparency. It gives both parties, you know, they're someone, if they have a question, to be able to have confidence to call and to be able to bounce it off their own other party person that may be there. So that is a goal that we're going to try to accomplish by the November election. It may not happen in March, but it will definitely is the goal to happen by November. So
the reducing the poll, the places,
precincts.
Yeah, the precincts. Is it going to spread out the precincts to where there's people going to have to drive further?
I tell you, it'll be amazing when you look at the maps, and even when I met with the council members, is that it will increase. But when you look at the maps where the polling locations are, and what I take them when I go meet with them is the proposed map and the existing. And also, I let the council members know, listen, if you like that polling location versus that one, I'm amenable to changing everything. But there wasn't what I call any drastic where someone was going. You know, when you consider the size of our city council districts, some are more rural. That can affect you more in those areas. But they weren't really the ones that were overpopulated with precincts. It was the more compact districts. There will be an additional, there's no doubt. There's no way you can eliminate. But there were some literally across the street from it. I know, for example, even in District 10 as well as in District 5, literally precincts across the street from each other. So in those cases, it's not. Oh, one thing also, when we eliminate a precinct on the elections next year, I will have a poll worker at a precinct that is no longer a precinct with a poll book to be able to tell someone, you know, yes, your polling place has moved. This is where it's moved to. And also, we will be sending out voter information cards as soon as it's codified, as well as it'll be on the sample ballot, as well as I will be promoting as we get close to elections. Listen, we change precincts to the media. People need to look to see where their precinct is, especially if you're one of those voters who want to vote at 6:45 on election day. You ought to know where you're going. And so I will be preaching that over and over again as we get close to the election to make sure nobody shows up, you know, and there's not someone there, and also someone can tell them where they're going. So that's real important to us so that people know that there's changes.
Also, I drive past two precincts.
To get to yours.
To get to mine.
Yeah.
What is there any going to be some sort of?
Some of that we looked at also, and I think this eliminated some of that. Also, some of these changes we also looked at, there hadn't been changed some of the precinct lines. Even though we may not have changed the polling location, we looked at a precinct to say, you know, this person is going farther to get to this one. We ought to draw them within this precinct. So we looked at every precinct to say, how can we make it as convenient as possible within each precinct? We also looked at splits, what we call splits, which is basically where a House or Senate seats or congressional seats splits a precinct. And if we could draw the line where there wasn't, and I think we had prior to the proposed map, remember how many splits? It was over 200 and something.
Yeah, it was like 213.
And I think we got it down to
170.
Yeah, that it sound doesn't, but splits make a difference. It also eliminates confusion where someone may go into a precinct and why is there a different ballot for this one or something, and it can be there's a split within that precinct. So we looked at that also.
Yeah, I really think that your idea of a central location with everybody there makes things work a whole lot better, and I like that idea.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Anything that this body can do, we'll surely be glad to
As we move forward, I'll let this body know. And the other side is, I think it's going to help us in the recruitment of poll workers. Because, again, if you're down in Mandarin and you got to go to the north side, or if they moved out to Cecil and you're at the beach or you're somewhere else, if it's in a core where everybody's got an equal access district and right off an interstate, I think it's a wonderful location. You know, I had proposed it about 12 years ago, but they said, you know, we want to put that land back on the tax rolls. It had been off the tax rolls for 18 years. It's been off the tax rolls now 28 years. So, yes.
All right. Yes.
So I asked a question about the increase in your ability to be able to find a precinct that will or polling sites, I'm sorry, that will adequately accommodate. But now I'm going to go back to the opposite side of that. The majority of these, you're taking more voters and they're putting them in less precincts. Is I know you have a keen eye for things, but when you have more voters, and I hear you saying you're going to do more vote by mail and early voting, so you alleviate the stress on the polling site for election day. But parking, getting people in and out, especially during those critical last 90 minutes, but parking availability to be able to get people in and out.
And we looked at the size. If we have what we call a super precinct, which may have as many as 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 voters, we also have multiple tabulators there. We also, the staffing is increased by the number of, it's not, we don't use the same number of poll workers in every precinct, so the staffing will be increased. And you know, some of these sites are actually early voting sites. And so from a standpoint of being equipped to handle a lot of voters, they are. And so that was critical, that if a precinct increased the size, could it handle the size? But again, even in our request for new equipment, we're not eliminating, not at this point, until we feel we've got the same amount of equipment for the same number of precincts we had, because we still have the same number of voters. You know, so it's really, it is a combination of staffing. I will say the manufacturer tells us in the DS-300, it does processes the ballot quicker. If that's, I think it was one of the things also. So whatever the process is, all that can help in the moving the voters through. And so we will look at that. And obviously, you know, we want them all in place by the PPP in March. And that, obviously, the NPAs and independents aren't voting in that, so it's a reduced number of voters. And so that will give us a test period. Are these precincts? What can we do? Those kind of things to see if we can, if we have any issues to correct before the primary and the general.
And if you're able to bring down, I imagine it's much easier to bring down the number of precincts. If we do all that, but we can't increase, can't find two extra places, do you think negotiations break down completely and they...
I think when we get further apart, it does. You know, what that number is, obviously one high, one low was very agreeable. Can you then go two? How far can you push it is the question. But I will say, I think, you know, it challenges us to find more precincts, you know, and it doesn't take, I mean, we can almost increase all of them by one if they had the locations, and if we could just find an additional one, even in eight, you know. So it's a true challenge. You know, things have changed over time. I think COVID didn't help during that period of time of people coming in. We had certain denominations that said they didn't want to do polling locations anymore because of issues that were on the ballot. And so many things has changed. You know, maybe at some point we'll get to vote centers. Well, you know, it's almost like early voting on election day, you know, as we move and transition. But one of the things to fix this, I think, is early voting and expanding that. And and part of early voting that's difficult to expand is much of our population as it grows is in the suburban areas. But city infrastructure lags getting to where the growth is. You know, in fact, yeah. And also I'm taught to legislators to – on early voting, you only get one wild card. Otherwise, you have to be in a government building. And so our one wild card, because the growth in down in the Bartram area, is renting space in a hotel. You know, but that I only get the one wild card. What I'm trying to tell the legislature is increase the number of wild cards. You know, but, you know, and there's ways you can make sure it's not abused, is that a wild card can't be any closer than whatever number of miles you want to a government building, so that you're not using, you know, because everybody, you know, always is worried about someone using the system. In other words, that's a better early voting site because it's here and there's certain workers or whatever dynamics about it. But over here is a library that would be better, but you're a little bit further from whatever your dynamics is. So, again, you have to look at how can it not be abused. And so, I will continue to move to even expand early voting more and more, you know, and try to increase that vote by mail. So,
one other thing, I live in Dinsmore area.
Yes.
And I'm the chair of a organization out there, the Concerned Citizens, and we're working on infrastructure is one of the things. And I had a meeting with some of the businessmen in that area and with some of the city council's members, and the projection for the area I live in the next 10 years is 72,000 homes.
I believe it. Because if you look at the county, it's one of the few areas you got a lot of development.
It's got plenty of space, yeah. And so that's something I think that really, I mean, you got a big plate of stuff to do, especially that grow, because they're already proposing 3,200 homes right beside me. So,
and you've been around, especially on the north side. look how long. In fact, back to when I was on the council over two decades ago, wanting a library on the north side. Okay, and that will be our next early voting site. When that we've already talked to the library director, so we'll even expand with it there. But it's taken two decades, yet the population has been there for.
There's no infrastructure whatsoever. Yeah.
And that's one of the things. And it's hard because you have to get ahead of the curve. And a lot of times people are lagging already. But you do. I mean, you almost have to look at what the future will hold and what kind of community centers, libraries will need to be built in that area.
Yes. It is a big deal. He's got some questions.
I'm always sure. I ask lots of questions. Forewarn you on that one. But that was really good questions. So the first one, I was curious, for the plaintiffs in the suit, who were the plaintiffs and where were they suing in? Was it state court or federal court? Or?
Oh, yeah. It is in circuit court.
Okay.
In fact, you can have this. Ooh, and I'll give to Jeff so they can disseminate to each of y'all. It was by voters within the county. They have standing. And that's the first thing our attorney looked at was did they have standing? And they do. And they're all registered voters. We checked. So it's in circuit court.
Okay. Cool. Okay, I was curious about that.
Thank you.
All right, on the early voting sites, when you said the district part, I didn't catch exactly where that was.
The Region 2 district part. That is where Powell is. It's over off of Monument Road in that area. It's kind of across the street, if you know the community, Hidden Hills. It is the Region 2 park there in that area.
Okay.
At Austin Park.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I know exactly what it is.
Now
okay.
You do. Now I've got the.
Okay. And then so that would add, based on the numbers that you said, EW is in District 7. Ed Austin's in District 2, Bartram's in District 11, Southside Community Center's in District 4, if I remember, and then Maxville's obviously in 12. Does that cover, I think in the past you guys have talked about the deficiency that you see in the southeast portion of the county?
What it does, just happen to have a map here for you.
I'm sorry.
So, Robert, are you playing Vanna White in this?
Yes. Robert's my Vanna. We took each early voting site and we used a 4-mile radius. We thought early voting should be at least 4 miles. What you see in the blue striped areas is where the new ones will impact, you know. And then also my concern was also if there was a city council district where I didn't have one, then, you know, and District 4 has never had one. So it was putting where I didn't have one in a council district. And so that's our coverage, the pink by what we had before. And the blue stripes, the additional sites, does add some additional coverage. Now, I will say as you get out further, where Mr. Pringle is out there, you know, obviously it is a little more rural as well as you get out into the north side. But I also say the library will be about in that area, which will take some of that area, which should open.
Is that along Main Street or?
No, it is. Robert knows that area.
It's an old dairy farm. It's down Cedar Point Road. It's where Cedar Point and New Berlin.
Yeah, right.
Oh, my brother lives out there.
Doug Moore.
Yes.
Yeah, it was. It's Doug Moore's old property.
Yeah, he lives out there.
And down here, of course, as always, I've been, you know, telling you guys for years, Bartram's our biggest challenge.
Mm-hmm. Where is the Bartram site going to be at?
The Bartram site is the wild card. It is a hotel site. Do you know the is the name on there?
I think it's the same Holiday Inn we use for the
We use it for election day down there. Yes. Yeah.
Well, you'll probably work early voting there too. They have a pool.
Is that part of the contract? That's a fringe benefit. okay, cool. And then on the Joseph E. Lee Center being eliminated, I'm assuming that because EWU will be open, you'll be shifting that. So a lot of those community groups that live like right in that vicinity, do you guys plan on having a conversation with them so that way they know?
Yeah, oh, with anybody and everybody, we can have a conversation. And also to try to disseminate it out both in our, as we send out our election mail to do that also.
Okay. Yeah. I just remember the being the loudest groups when the site at
Gateway
closed. Yeah. So I just want to preempt that for you, so that way you already knew what you were going to have to deal with. All right, so on the outreach to VBM voters, I really like that a lot. I've been talking about that almost feel for years. One thing that the supervisor in Nassau is doing, and I mentioned this to Robert in the past meeting, is on her VBM envelopes, she has a checkbox that allows for people to be able to re-sign up for vote by mail. She just holds and doesn't process it until after the election. Apparently, she was one of the four SOEs that did it because she felt that there was nothing in the law that said that she couldn't. So I didn't know that that was a topic of discussion with the association.
I will get an opinion from the division. I mean, it's that is, again, it goes back to, when it comes to law, it goes back to, again, you're requesting it before the year's out.
Right.
She's not entering it until the next year.
Right.
But that's not really, I think, the way it's designed to work. I mean, I admire it for doing it, but I think
that creative.
She got creative. I'm not sure that would uphold. You know, I'm a by the rule book, you know, so, but that's something I can check on, you know.
Okay.
If it works, I think that's an excellent idea, you know.
I only ask because I know you guys buy your envelopes in large volume, so.
Yeah.
Before you would buy it, essentially you'd kind of lock yourself out of whatever potential that would happen for them.
Yeah, and we're redesigning the envelope now, you know, because it has name changes in the message and all that kind of stuff, so.
And then
Nassau
County.
Janet Atkins, yeah.
I was trying to remember her name and I was blanking out. All right, so on the early voting, precinct changes, I made a note next to the precincts that I probably saw the biggest changes. So for five, like was mentioned earlier, from the 5 to 11, 7 from 18 to 12, and then 10 from the 19 to 12. I know, especially when you're talking about 7 and 10, particularly how population growth has kind of come, a lot of those precincts are kind of concentrated with each other. So for the sites that are going to remain, what kind of work are you guys going to be doing, especially for like a lot of these older neighborhoods where you have a lot of older voters that may not necessarily catch everything? How are you guys planning on letting them know about that change so that way you have less confusion?
I think it's when we send out the voter information card, we have to do more than send the card. It has to be alerting them that their precinct has changed. You know, so in the same way, I'm big on, as much as the post office will allow us to put in red, your precinct has changed, whatever, something to flag. Now, that's not to say everybody's – I will guarantee you there will be people who will show up at their old precinct no matter what we do, you know. But we need to get as many people as possible educated to know if there's this change. And, again, some will have changed not because even the precinct, but because we've changed the line of the precinct. But it will be closer, you know. So – but we're looking – and we'll have another meeting before we probably – produce all our mailings and stuff, and I'll come back and tell you, you know, what are the things we're doing to get that message out. So,
okay. And then for those voters that are under 40 like me and may not necessarily always pay attention to mail, because I think I probably check mail once or twice a month, are you kind of planning on doing any kind of like media blitz, just like going on news or public interest stories or anything like that, or social media posts that are like more graphically pleasing to let people know that the changes are coming?
Yeah, well, definitely our social media is trying to be increased, and we're trying to do that on all social media platforms. We'll also do both press releases when this happens, and then usually, and I'm speaking to three groups this week, you know, just wherever I can speak, go out and speak. We'll do everything that we can possibly do within our budget, so we don't have buku millions to do a television ad, but the media picks up on this, and I've got a good rapport with our media, and so we'll get the message out, you know.
On the outreach, when you were talking about the older voters that are going to potentially be targeted as a universe where you would do the initial outreach, even if they may have not signed up for vote by mail before, so is the messaging going to be a little bit different from what you would have sent to someone that was previously registered
I think so. I mean, if they haven't voted by mail, it'll be talking about, you know, and you know, again, in my perfect world, I have this perfect world. I would love if I was sending out a message and it was to the Democratic voters. You were like saying, vote by mail is great on there, you know, and same thing if I was sending this out now by the Republicans, you know, we support vote by mail, you know. That would be ideal if I had also the community and the support of the parties saying it's good to vote by mail. And as I told a group last night, my job is to build the confidence in it, how we do it, the security of it, what's happened, and those kind of things. And if they don't trust the post office of dropping it off at an early voting site, there are more early voting sites, those kind of things. So it's kind of like building that interest and trying to get partners to push it also, you know, but we'll be looking at them, giving them that option, you know. And you know, part of it is there's also many demographics. If you got a demographic of people, you have to look and see how many and what you can do. If you got some voters that I don't care which party and I don't care what age, they always vote on election day. In fact, I deal constantly with people who say we should only vote on election day and we should hand count the ballots. And those two things I am very much opposed to, you know. So, but if I can get partners to, you know, that are engaged to say, listen, this is a good way. One thing I know about vote by mail is this for sure, is that those who request a vote by mail in many cases are twice as likely to vote it than someone to go to the polls. So it increases our voter turnout if I get people engaged and vote by mail. I tell people, you got a drop box at the end of your driveway, it's your mailbox, we pay for the postage. You know, it doesn't get much easier, you know. So it's about encouraging people and giving them confidence.
No, I agree with that. And I was curious in terms of sometimes my brother's a good example of this. So I'm 32. He's 28. And he refuses to not vote on election day. He has it in his mind that if he votes on election day, it's going to count. And if he doesn't vote on election day and he tried to early vote or vote by mail, something fishy is going to happen. And I got him to sign up for vote by mail during the 2020 cycle, and the way I kind of convinced them is like you can literally track your ballot and see what stage it's at, and that's the one way that a lot of times if you're voting in person, you don't get that same benefit. So have you thought about enhancing the process for people to know the stages of when their ballot is requested, when it's delivered, when it's counted? I know you have the functionality to send out the sample ballots to people. Is it possible for you to send a notification to someone and saying your ballot's been received or you have an issue with your ballot? I know you have to, by statute, send out the notifications and stuff, but using the technology that you already have for those types of purposes to kind of enhance the experience?
To answer your question, the short answer is yes. There's also, we were looking at the other company that did the ballot tracking.
We had a demo today.
Today. And Robert, share on that one. Did it seem, I haven't yet learned all of that, but to get to your point, the more confidence I can get to how you can track and know where your ballot is and the stage of it and notify you, those kind of things, will build that confidence. Yes, I know the elections office had received it because, you know, the other side of it is, the good thing is if you know that it hasn't been received, then go in and go ahead and vote because either you may have to vote provisional because it may show that you requested, but it hasn't been received. So if it hadn't been received, then we can cancel if it came in and go ahead and vote. So a lot of that is about telling them where the status is. But tell about the demonstration. Did it seem to I'm in the dark yet, so tell me, what did it seem beneficial?
It's a national vendor called BallotTrax, and it is currently used by, I believe, 4 or 5 counties here in the state of Florida. It is an opt-in procedure, which basically is once we send out a vote-by-mail ballot to the voter, we let them know that this is something that they can do, that they can track their ballot. So what I mean when I say opt-in, it's not automatic. As soon as you request the ballot, you're not automatically enrolled in BallotTrax. But it will use the post office's intelligent mail barcode system to where you could, right now we have that ability, but the voter basically has to call us, and we have to research it and then go find it and then get back to the voter, let them know where their ballot is in the mail stream. With this, it's all web-based. The voter would be able to go on and see exactly where their ballot is in the mail stream by themselves at any time on the web. Also, it would also provide notification for cures and ballots that have been that have an issue one way or the other.
Would it also include the tracking of when you actually receive the ballot and it's going through the, was it?
Been tabulated?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like, you know how Amazon,
mm-hmm.
when you order a package,
I want
Amazon,
it to be just like that.
It's, well, it's not. It's
only
not
in the
like,
sense of being able to track the stages. Not,
it's not like it's going to take a picture when they drop it off.
No, not that. Not
but,
that.
But,
it would be nice.
Yeah. And it's not like it's going to say it's five steps away.
Yeah.
But it will be text It is text messages that will say, your request for a ballot has been received. Your ballot has been mailed today. You know, so that way voters know that it should be coming. And then if you get the text that says your ballot has been mailed, then if it's 2 or 3 days and you haven't received it, then you still have that information that you can independently go on and look for it.
Okay. So what's the possibility if it turns out being great? I don't know whether or not you guys are doing a sole source or you're doing an RFP or whatever process you're taking, if it turns out to be something that's
beneficial, yeah.
Is that included in the budget for you guys to do, or
what? They're getting back to us with a quote, because by the time all this was presented, everything had already been presented budget-wise.
We do have some grant money. We'll look at that and whether or not to be able to apply any grant money to that. So, again, I am one that any technology that we can make the process more secure, more accessible, all those kind of things to give confidence in it. I'm looking at everything.
There are some drawbacks to it.
Like anything.
What are the drawbacks?
Well, like I said, it's an opt-in process. So voters have to choose to do it. But the statute requires that if you have a error on your, like if your signature is not accepted or if you don't put in a signature, then it's mandatory to return that. So I could see how the previous administration may not have looked at it because you're going to have two systems running at the same time. You're going to have people who choose to do the ballot track system, they're going to be notified one way. People who don't choose to are going to be notified another way.
The true opportunity for you to really do a clean sweep, unfortunately, is when the requests get wiped clean on every election cycle. But how would people opt in, theoretically?
They just go online and put in their voter information number and their date of birth, and they get like a tracking number, kind of like you do with Amazon.
And there would be a link on our website to do that. Mm-hmm. So,
my website was the second to last question. When I pre-registered, I still remember what the website looked like, and it looks the same as when I pre-registered. The city website's also in the same kind of situation. Is there any plan in the future for the website to get a refresh at all?
The question is really, what do we want to accomplish with the refresh? I'm open to suggestions on what that is. We hear from both ends. I mean, some is there's too many drop downs, or there's too this, or it's hard to find something, or those kind of things, or I don't see. Back even that website provider, actually, I went to when I was SOE, which is VR Systems is the web. And now they do, I think, almost everybody's website in the state.
Yeah,
pretty close to
they're,
it.
They're everyone's voter registration system. They're not quite everyone's website.
But most of them.
They have the majority.
Yeah, so they've got flexibility what you want. But it's sometimes taking away something that someone likes. Like we had the teachers that liked the section that gave you some history and all that kind of stuff. But if you can give me suggestions and we look at it and say that makes sense, we're open to it, you know. You will see a little change. You'll at least see my picture.
I saw that. I saw that in the corner. No, I was just thinking aesthetically because it's had the same, even if it's just my note, it's the same theme that we've had for like almost 20 years. So I just didn't know whether or not that's ever a part of the process when you guys review it. And then the last question I had was about voter registration in high schools. Since we're going into a presidential year, I'm assuming that you'd have much more 17, 18-year-olds that would be interested in registering. So with a new school year, I know you guys already do it, but what's the plan?
Good question, because it did kind of, and I think COVID changed for the previous administration some of this, but it did kind of morph differently than what I was doing prior. We really, and Robert remembers this, we were very engaged in it. I think during my 10 years, we registered over 68,000. Yeah, and so, and sometimes as many in some drives, you know, that school year, many as 6,000-7,000, you know. And we made competitions in the office. What they would do is they would, like an NFL draft, they would get teams within the office and they would draft the schools. They would go around who gets next, and you knew which schools. And so we made a competition out of it and stuff like that. That hadn't happened in a while. And we also gave awards to the school, the Freedom Awards, for those who registered the most. I do want to get back engaged in that. I will say, since then and during that process, online voter registration has advanced further. More get their registration sometimes when they DMV and their driver's license. More early registrations of 16, 17-year-olds has happened. So I don't know if we'll ever have the same success we had then. I'm waiting to engage whoever the new superintendent is, because it starts from the top down. And back in my time, we had some superintendents very engaged. We also, it depends on the principal. It depends on whoever runs the social studies department. We've had some great teachers that were like, man, they really promoted it. And they also had contests and get everyone registered. So it's really starting from scratch. So to say what we're going to do yet, it will start a little bit whenever we get a new superintendent and I can engage that conversation. The difficult thing is I would love to engage as much as possible in this school year that they're in now, because the problem is doing the fall of next year, you're in the middle of the two elections. And so the statute says once a year you're supposed to do student registration drives. So if we do it probably in the spring, you know, maybe before the election or end of this year, you know, I'd like to do it sometimes January, maybe in that period of time, is then I will have qualified for 2024s. And I don't have to worry about doing it in the middle of my busiest time. And then I'll come back in the spring after 24. So that's what mentally I'm thinking about timing-wise. You know, but again, I'm open to that. But that we've, as you mentioned earlier, all the things we're working on, that is on the list, but we haven't put a lot of focus on it as of today.
Did you have something else?
Oh, let's forget. For the new site, would you guys, for the CIP, would they factor in selling the land of where the current site is into recovering the costs? And I know you guys are coming up with the engineering, but is there an idea in terms of what it would cost?
You know, what's interesting, I tell this often, when I proposed it over 10 years ago at the same site, I had a developer said it would be about $3.5 million. Instead, we rented Imason for about $3 million for 10 years. I would propose that our rent, if we stayed at Imason longer, would probably over 10 years be close to $5 million. But now the cost will probably be somewhere between 10 and 12. It would have been prudent to do it back then. Hindsight's 20/20. But I'm hoping they see the same thing. Elections are not going to go away. If it does, we're all in trouble. And the reality is it's the best place for it. And I don't see any plans for it. And it takes care of a struggling area and really puts something that you're going to get hundreds of poll workers coming downtown as well as our central location. So
I imagine the site of where you guys are at are much more valuable from where it was.
I think it's gone up. I mean, it's in the Cathedral District. It would probably be sold for somewhere between 1.2 and 1.6 million. It's one of the few buildings that has three separate, street parking. We've already had an interest just for someone to buy our back parking lot. The gentleman who owns the building next to it, the Elena Flats, so Jack Meats. So there's interest in the property. So it would be something to offset the cost, but it definitely would not be something, you know, I don't think the city would want to keep it. I think they would want to put it on the market.
They have plenty of empty spaces around the city.
Yes.
And two, if they waited another 10 years, then it would go up another
$10 million, if not more.
One of the questions I had is, do you have any difficulties with the languages?
Well, as you know, mandated to have bilingual. Everything we print is bilingual. We'd love to recruit more poll workers. I do have staff members in my office that are bilingual. So from a standpoint, we do you constantly get someone who comes in. You know, nice now technology, Google Translator and stuff, you can help people. You know, but standpoint, languages is always going to be an issue, and it's only be more. Finding people who are bilingual in multiple languages is helpful but difficult to find, you know.
Does any other questions?
I was looking something up for the thing. I was cheating, looking at your map over there.
I can give you a little bit of a metric on language. We have a we have a system that we do use that we've been using for a long time called LangServe. And it's only the good thing about it is it only costs on an as-use basis. And it's basically a 1-800 number that any of our poll workers can call. And
thank
basically
you, yeah.
It has over 50 languages.
Really? What's the name of it?
LangServe.
LangServe.
And I could just tell you from the invoices I've paid from it, it's like a couple dollars that we use per election. It's not used very often at all.
But it's good to have.
But it's there.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
There was one thing, things that are out of your control, but I'd let her.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you, when you talk about creating awareness, there's one thing that moves around the city through every zip code, and it does it all day long, our buses. Have you ever thought of either putting something on the buses, especially the ones that run during the highest traffic hours or would actually get the most exposure?
To answer your question, no, I've never looked at that. I have in the past been able to get billboards donated, you know, as a public service announcement. I've done that both in the elections prior and also at the property appraiser's office. It's easy for those because the digital are easy to change and it's not a production cost. But I can look into the buses, you know, as we look. We have some money for promotion advertising. I hate to say that the category says promotion is not really, but we'll look and see, you know, what we can do with that dollars as far as how much we have and how far. But I'll make a note of the buses just to get some cost numbers, you know. Okay.
Really sure how many of them are actually going to renew their third-party registration organization status in the state of Florida because a lot of things are in play. But you know, there are a lot of us who assist people doing voter registration, and a lot of us have moved to online voter registration with the registertovoteflorida.gov. There's a misleading thing on the website, just like there is with
okay.
The voter registration application. When someone turns in a voter registration application, they just assume they've registered to vote, which is not true. It means you've turned in an application. You may get a letter from the SOE. If your address wasn't really good, you're not going to get a letter from the SOE. But the same thing is really true with the Division of Elections. When someone goes to the OBR site, they submit it, and there's a thing in there thanking you for your registration. But then when you read it, there's an acknowledgement of your application. And we're trying to help people understand that you still need to follow up with your SOE if you don't get it. You brought up Amazon. I was thinking more like a pizza delivery. But, you know, a number of organizations had reached out to the DOE in the past and said, why is it not as simple as when I put my information in to do the online voter registration, why can't I get an email acknowledgement so they have a way to communicate with me directly that, one, you received my application online,
with it, and I need to fix or what have you.
And Robert will probably be maybe a little more familiar, but there's a couple steps in that process that one is to answer your question. You can register to vote and not be eligible to vote. And the reason for that is we had one the other day. In fact, a state representative said, how did you register this person and not be eligible to vote? And I said, well, first of all, you can register without ID, but which means you're registered, but you're not eligible until when you go to vote and present ID. So then you become eligible. So some of that is in that language is because people would assume I've registered, I can go vote. Not exactly, you know. But also in that process, if a application is denied for whatever reason, not a matching Social Security number or whatever reason, something left off that's one of the boxes that you must fill in. When we get that back, we do send a notification to them. That is a process with, if they left something off, an application highlighted, you need to do this. You know, so I know we notify them then. The other step of that is obviously when they get registered, and we need to do a better job on the website, the one way you know you have been registered is you will get a voter information card. You know, if you don't get your voter information card, you didn't get registered, you know. So, but part of that can giving a little better explanation on the web of steps, you know, as you've now registered, you know, it must now be processed. If it something is not correct, you will be notified. If it is correct, you will get a voter ID card within normally 3 to 4 weeks, you know, those kind of things. It probably would help if we put that kind of information, you know, on the website.
I get it, though. That is the DOE, and that's the state. That's not
yeah.
Well, yeah, and that's what I was saying. The good thing about OVR or online voter registration is it won't let you miss a field. Right, it won't let you miss a checkbox. It pre-validates your address to make sure you do have a valid address. But just like Mr. Holland said, you still may be in a residential address and you may be a citizen, but you still may not be eligible. And it doesn't tell you that. And the bad thing is too, when you go into OVR, you're actually going out of each individual local county supervisor and going to the state's online voter registration website.
Yeah.
I get the feeling it's seen an increase in traffic with the third-party voter registration organizations taking a step back in a lot of cases.
And I've met with one of the third-party groups the other day, and they were asking questions, and this may help also to kind of disseminate this information. As you know, part of that process is really about when the third-party group takes ownership of the application. Which means if you're doing it and you accept it, that's where the onus becomes on the third-party group. There is nothing wrong with having an application, giving it to them, looking at it to say, yes, it's complete, and you can provide them an envelope, but I tell people don't have your groups on the return because then you could end up taking possession, but they could put their return address, you could put ours on there, give them an envelope with a stamp, or give them, you know, the app and say, mail it in. So that's one way you can eliminate the potential. The fines are pretty strong. They were really trying to almost eliminate third-party groups, you know, by making it so, or at least say, nobody's going to go down this road because I think it's as much as $50,000, you know. Yeah, when you accumulate it, yeah, in a calendar year. So there are ways, I won't say workaround, but ways that you lessen your ability to get fined and responsibility, which is basically don't take possession of the application, you know, and, you know, so there's ways to do that, and we encourage that. We want to see as many people registered, you know, so we're there to help. One limitation we do have is sometimes we'll get a third-party group coming in, and they will want 1,000, you know, We try to limit that because, again, some people are overzealous and saying, I need this, and then we never see them bring back that many. So we try to limit the number people take at a time. If they're processing and they're bringing it back, we will keep feeding you all the application you need. But I think we're somewhere the most that you can take out of the office at one time, I think, is around, I think we limited it to 200 or something around that. Because, again, normally one drive isn't going to do much more than that. So, and it may require someone to come to our office more, but we've got a limited amount to run the copies or the applicants. We used to get them from the state and probably still get some. But that's one limitation we put, is to limit the number they take at one time.
And I do want to end with a compliment, though, if you don't mind. So
I will say your outreach team, I think, has done a phenomenal job. I understand now Jennifer Casey has also
yes.
joined your team, but what Greg was doing. I know we're all trying to get over this technology hump with the express vote and the not touch screen technology, but I really do think we have an opportunity to continue to get out in front of people and educate them about it so they become less inhibited about what it is and what it isn't. So that's going to make it much easier for us as you bring this equipment online. But I think they've done a great job, and I appreciate it a lot.
That was one of my priorities coming in, was to really have a dedicated department for outreach poll worker training, similar to what I had before. There's a director with Greg. There's two teachers and communicators, which is Roxy Tyler. She used to be on WOKV, and so she's great with communications. And then Jennifer Casey was an educator. She's great with developing online. We're actually teaching modules. We're looking at also, one, as we think it will help in the poll worker recruitment, is to have part of the training to be done online. So when you come in, instead of spending 3 hours, an hour and a half may be actually online training, so that you can take online, and then you're only coming in for an hour, hour and a half to touch the equipment and learn more about that. So anything we can do to make the process easier, we're looking at in the technology. So
unforeseen circumstances, things you can never plan for.
I call it Murphy's Law.
Everything bad will happen. If in the middle of your push, when you're doing these new precinct changes and you're sending out new voter registration cards, and the council's already approved the new precincts, and the state and those outside groups decide to settle the redistricting case that affects congressional district, old 5, new 4, how does that affect you in terms of how you would respond to it?
Well, there's a couple of them. You got two lawsuits that could affect us. One is the lawsuit on the school board districts, wanting to redo a couple of those elections. That we'll have to look at, and then as well as if the congressional seat has changed. As you know, you can't change one seat without changing a lot of seats. I mean, because it's a balloon. You shrink or do something, you squeeze it, it goes somewhere else, it comes away from somewhere else. It will be just like anything else. It won't so much affect us with the precincts.
Imagine with splits, maybe.
Splits, it will probably increase those. We'll have to draw those. It's something we have to program so that the ballots will be created for the splits. You know, that'll happen. But from the same standpoint, you know, it will probably... I've always believed that on the congressional, it will never be in the middle of a congressional cycle. It would take place, I think, at the next election. So as well as the school board, is not to do a special to correct it, is to do at the next election. So in essence, it doesn't add an election to us, but we would have to program the splits. And on the school board, obviously, we'd have to add the races on there, and they would be running for, you know, a partial term. You know.
Good. Any other questions on that? I'll go to the presidential primary preparation. So is that something you want to?
Yeah, the PPP, on the preparation for that, in a sense, at this point, where we're preparing is, what are we going to do as far as training? Obviously, what equipment will we have? What are the sites that we're looking for early voting? We're contemplating what will the hours be, maybe the days of early voting. The PPP is, again, you drop off about 150,000 voters that won't be voting in that race because they're not eligible, because they're independents or MPAs. So you look at, again, how much of demand will you need, you know, for that. So we're in the early planning stages, but we're not to the point yet of nailing down everything for that yet. Now, a lot will be, most critical will be when we get through the budget and we know where we're at with the equipment, with the what we're getting, and also when we resolve the precincts. So we've got to solve some of that, get our voter information cards out, develop some of our outreaches and stuff like that, and then we'll truly get into the planning for the PPP on March 16th.
Do you expect any demonstrations or things like that because of the shrinkage?
You know, if part of that is anything, is communications. You know, and I'm open with, obviously, all the council members, going to them first. I will go to the legislators, and I've already set up meetings to meet with them, and then I meet with groups. It's about explaining that. You know, I think any group will say, from the standpoint of the lawsuit, is it's a valid lawsuit. Now, can we get some other number? Really comes down to, is it feasible? Can we find locations? Can we move the needle or something like that? And there's nothing to say that if we go with this number in March, can we find some different ones for August and November? I would never change between August and November. And I wouldn't want to change. It'd have to be between after the March election and probably prior to June. But if we're able to find additional and make tweaks to this, there's an opportunity in there to do that, you know. But again, it's a window in 24 that, you know, if we could find additional or do something, we could.
Is there areas that you would look for more of the precincts than other areas?
Right now would be is in the areas with the lowest ones, you know, the one. And I think what we qualify basically is we have a district 4 that has 10. District 4 has 10. So that would have to be increased. And then District 8, we're going to 11. So you got to bump up the smallest one first, you know, before you can do anything. Now, some of the ones at 11, if we thought there was a need to go to 12, we could do that, you know. But it's a balance between trying to stay between that 10 and 12.
I see the 2, 8, and 12 is takes in probably a third of the county or more, probably.
When you look at land area.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, at one time, and you remember back in early 2000, yeah. Warren Alvarez covered from Argyle to Mayport Village.
Yeah, 11, you know, District 11.
District 11, yeah.
Yeah, it's huge. I was just wondering that maybe some of us, the members, might know some place that we could recommend a polling place.
Well, we're committed to 11 in District 8. And I think we still haven't nailed down all of the, if we nailed down all of 11, that was where we're going from 9 to 11.
Is Dinsmore Baptist, is it one of the polling places in 8?
8, I'll tell you real quick.
Dinsmore Community Center.
Okay, then it's not the Baptist Church. I was
I believe they asked the church. Because when our person who does this asked me if I knew of any places out in Dinsmore, I told her there because I used to play softball there when I was a kid. My church played ball there. But that she talked to them, and then I told her about Dinsmore Community Center. So I'm thinking the church probably was a no go.
Okay, I just know Pastor Butler. He's a real good friend of mine. And there's another church, the Baptist Church.
Mm-hmm.
They're not that far apart. So I don't know if the one out on Plummer Road is inside Duval. There's one on Plummer that it's close to the Duval-Nassau line, but I think it might be
on the other
I'm
side?
Sure.
Is
I'm
that
sure?
Is that the one that's
it's right on the creek?
You head out towards the I had almost bought a house out there. It's called the Horse
Ranch Club
Ranch. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It's just the other.
I
side.
I know the Ranch Club's in Nassau.
Yeah, no, the Ranch Club is in.
Duval.
Is in Duval.
Oh, it's in Duval.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So if it's on this side of the Ranch Club,
it goes
it
way on past the Ranch Club.
Okay.
Yeah.
But any sites that you want us to check out, we'll be glad to, you know.
I'll ask around because there's.
Okay.
I'll see a whole bunch of people here in next week.
And even if we have to, if it's a hotel site, again, parking sometimes on some of our hotels. Our the parking does get full, but we're agreeable to even pay in a hotel.
Yeah, there's some of the folks I know out there that's in these huge HOAs.
Yeah,
maybe one of them might be. I'll ask.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions on that? Okay, so do we have any old business? We'd got emails about Robert. Was it all taken care of? Something to do with someone on? Was it you? Who was it we're talking about that could still sit on the panel? Yeah, it was Robert.
Oh, I didn't even see any emails on that. Probably if it was during the month I was gone.
That was it.
I actually retired.
Yes, that was.
And then but now I'm back.
Okay. So. Well, I just wanted to make sure we got that resolved because I told him we can't do without him.
Well,
while I was retired, I didn't get any email, so they turned off my email. So.
They have a crazy thing; they actually don't give you your email back. Yeah. You have to get a new email. It doesn't make any sense, but it's the way.
Well,
it
welcome
works.
Back, Robert.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mike.
But in most cases, let me tell you, I did during my 10 years, I will be attending. It's not going to be a rare thing. Today I was meeting with a council member and then he had to cancel. So I was planning on coming down but didn't know if I'd be able to make the start, but it worked out fine. So
we're glad it is because the information we got is
invaluable.
Really is invaluable. Yes.
What I was going to say was actually it was just I corresponded with you and with
Mr.
Holland that the code specifically says that the supervisor of elections employee representative has to be a full-time employee.
Right.
So that posed a problem if Robert was just going to be a part-time employee. Now, he could be reappointed. Well, it's even more complicated because the supervisor's designated employee is not appointed by a resolution. It's just the supervisor says, this is my person, and that we don't do a resolution for them like we do for the rest of you.
Right.
Which, if any of the rest of you didn't meet a qualification of some kind, you could do it as an ordinance and waive that requirement. So it kind of makes it an unusual situation. We couldn't waive the full-time part because we don't do an appointment. I mean, we could do an ordinance, I guess, that would waive that requirement to allow a part-time employee to be the SOE's representative.
And what we'll probably do, I mean, when I come, I'll still bring, if Robert's available to come, Robert, because he's got a wealth of information. But it'll either be me or we'll have a full-time employee, you know, that'll be here with Robert, you know, but it doesn't prevent Robert from coming, but just based on where the rules are, not to be the sole representative.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure. I know we had talked about it, but I wanted to clear the air before something
sure
went awry. So, good. That's a good answer, and that'll work real good. The new business, any new business with the annual report?
Which you have one at your places. What I did was just go through the minutes of the meetings of the last year and pick out the things that you talked about, put them into just three broad categories. And I will attach the minutes of all those meetings to that as part of the report. But if there's anything that you specifically remember that you don't think I've captured or something I've missed, I'd be happy to add whatever it is.
So is any of the members, Daniel?
No, looks like everything's there. I talk too much. That's my problem. Yeah, everything's there on my end.
So are we?
I move to good. We adopt the 2022-2023 annual report.
I second that. All in favor, say aye.
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 So moved. All right. Next is the calendar. The EAP meeting calendar finalized at November meeting, okay?
That was just, if you want to start thinking about when you want to meet next year, you're required to meet quarterly. Of course, you have more or less meetings depending on what's going on in the election calendar that year. And in the year that you don't have any elections, quarterly, because that's what was required. If you're in a presidential or a gubernatorial election, you might want to meet 5 or 6 times and space that out depending on when the elections are and if you want to meet before and after. Maybe Mr. Holland can give us the dates of the elections next year. You all can be thinking for voting at the next meeting on when you want to call your meetings for.
And obviously March 16th is the first one. 19th, I'm sorry.
March 19th, August 20th, and November 3rd.
November 5th.
So
March 9th, if March 19th, that's the third Tuesday in the month. So early voting.
Would the panel like to meet right after or before these elections? A critique of before or after? Or
Austin looks like he has a thought.
Pardon?
Austin looks like he has a thought.
Oh, right.
Makes sense. Do after, right? Kind
of do. Yeah, the before.
Oh, before?
Or after was, yeah, that, I'm just soliciting. I'm sorry.
Would it make more sense to do after so we can see how it went and then critique the next one?
I have no opinion.
If we're trying to figure out, like, for the presidential primary, if early voting is March 4th through the 17th, is sometime in February, if you're trying to get a read ahead, because he's mentioned a lot of stuff here that between all the redistricting, may or may not, and what's going on with equipment and precincts. So I don't know if anybody would be interested in setting a meeting in February.
And then we can plan out whatever meeting after that. That's almost like a review of what happened during the PPP, but its preparation will happen in August.
But also I'd like to hear from Mr. Holland. And I know that he don't like a whole lot of meetings, but there's some that I think that's necessary too.
Hey, I'm very agreeable, so we got something on the schedule. Or
no, I was going to say if the next meeting is in, so when would the next scheduled meeting be? November 15th?
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's good on my calendar.
So then if you went quarterly after, that's going to put you in March. So you would definitely have to do it, and you don't want to do it the week. You'd be looking at February 21st if you did it in February. So at that time, vote-by-mail ballots would already be going out pretty much. Training may still be going on at that time. moving of equipment will be getting ready to happen. So February 20, that those last 2 weeks in February would be pretty active for us.
You know where you were at as far as poll workers, precincts?
Yeah.
We'll still be well, we'll know where we're at as far as precincts, definitely.
We'll know that most likely even in the November meeting.
But it would basically just be an update on vote by mail and training, which, like you said, is kind of irrelevant because you don't know how many political parties are even going to be having a primary. Then after, it would be April 17th. If you want to do it after the election. That would give us ample time to conduct the audit and
everything. Let's see, November, December, January. That'd be 6 months between meetings.
That would be more than a quarter. Yes.
Yeah.
December, January, February, March, April.
Yeah, that's 6 months we need to do. That's not even close to quarterly.
Jeff, is it the distance between the meetings, or is it per the quarter of the calendar?
My recollection is the code says that just required to meet quarterly, which I would think would mean at least four times in a calendar year.
Yeah. So if you're more than 3 months between meetings, that's not the issue. Yeah. Are you in right now we are in the second quarter of this year. So you need one in the third quarter of this year.
Depends if you're in the government
quarter. Well, yeah. So we've got one more. A meeting in November would meet your requirement for 23. And then a meeting in January or early February could meet your first requirement. And then something post-March could actually hit into your second quarter.
I think maybe we do late January, the third week of January.
So that
would
be the
21st.
No, that'd be 17th.
January. I'm sorry, I'm looking at February.
That's 17th.
Yeah, it'd be January 17th.
Okay, let's do that.
So did we also confirm November?
November 15th.
Okay.
Can I steal Jeff's pen?
Yeah, because mine died.
Yeah, November 15th would be the next meeting. And then January the 17th. And then we would do April.
When April, did you say, was best for
you? Oh, I wouldn't say. It's not what's best. It's just that would be the first.
17th.
Would that be all right?
After the 17th would be, April 17th would be the normal third week after the election.
Okay. By that time, everything's
we know pretty
done.
Much what's going on. Okay, let's do the 17th of April.
And that's still before qualifying.
So. When's qualifying this next year?
Always in June.
Oh, for next year's elections? It's usually about the second week in June.
Okay, so it's the week of the 10th? Qualifying?
If you want to have information on ballot layout and things like that, then yes.
Okay. So, if we're going with the third,
that's a holiday.
Are you looking at July?
No, I was looking in June. But is July, because July, by that point, Vivian ballots would already start being have to be in June, but I was just trying to figure out what date makes the most sense in June.
Again, if you keep with the normal schedule, it'll be June 19th.
Yeah. City holiday now.
That's Juneteenth.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That's why I kept on saying it's a holiday. Is it okay if we meet off the normal day, Jeff? Or does that kind of... Okay.
The 26th. June 26th be good? Okay.
Probably
so. 15th. The next one is what, October 21st and November 3rd for early voting. Election on the 5th.
So it'd be probably good for us to meet in September.
One in January.
Knock on wood for no hurricanes. First, my birthday is on the 1st, and it always gets ruined because a tropical depression decides to barrel through the state.
Take a shower.
Yeah, that would be the 18th.
Yes, we make sure we'll get it all.
How much time after the presidential election
does it take for you guys to close everything?
Depends on what kind of election it is.
Yeah, if it's in court, it could be a while. Maybe 2 years from now.
Perfect world, normal world.
Whatever normal is. November 22nd.
Isn't that the week of, oh, that's the week before Thanksgiving.
What was the January? 26th. Yeah, because remember, with the, if the election is November 5th, then the first unofficial certification is that Saturday, which would be the 9th. Final can't be until 10 days after because of military ballots, so that would be the 15th. And then we have to do an audit within a week of final certification, so that's the 22nd.
So it's better for us to meet before or after the
after.
Say after.
To know the results.
So then it probably makes more sense for it to be in December than since that following week is Thanksgiving. Yeah.
That wouldn't work very well.
So December 4th.
Yeah, it'll work.
September
18th, yep. Okay. Got the calendar set. Everybody good? All right, we have public comment. We have a oh, I'm sorry. Thank you for coming. So any other thing before we adjourn? I get a motion.
Motion to adjourn.
I'll second that motion.
We adjourn. Thank you, folks, for coming.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for having us.
Okay.